Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to episode number 11 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Thank you all for joining us. Again, we hope you're enjoying the podcast. And I think I say this almost every time. Mike and I are certainly enjoying doing it as well. Still, after 10 full episodes now, we're still plugging away and having a good time with it. Hopefully you guys, too, like the new format with splitting up the two, I guess, sections of the podcast, with the interview section being one and the kind of the rundown of the local race scene and things of that nature. Hopefully that works out a little bit better for everyone and time-wise for listening to the podcast.
You made it through one race season.
Yeah, we did. We made it through almost an entire calendar year. I think we started a little bit late, maybe March or April. I forget when we started, yeah. But we definitely went through a race season, which is cool. And we'll talk a little bit about that here later on in the podcast. That's one of the things that I want to discuss as well. But let's get started with some of the traditional things that we run down with race results, upcoming races, that kind of a thing. What do we got for race results, Mike?
Do you want to start with Whistle Stop?
Yeah, let's start with Whistle Stop. That's a pretty big race. Tons of local people go down to that. We tried to get the list of a lot of local folks, but I know we're going to miss a few, so I apologize for that. But Whistle Stop, for those of you who aren't familiar with that race, really fun race over in Ashland, Wisconsin. They have four different distances, a 5K, a 10K, a half, and a full. The 5K and the 10K tend to be a little bit of smaller races compared to the other two, especially the half. That's a pretty big race. But the 5K was actually one of our locals, local females. I think she came in third, was Annie Hypanen. So she had a really nice race over there. And then also in the 10K, her husband, Dave, won the 10K and set a course record in 34:29. So congratulations to Hypo for that.
Power couple.
Yeah, the power couple, those two have won quite a few races in this past season, which is pretty cool to see. Also locally in the 10K was Dan Duff, Nate Weishart, Gretchen, my wife, and Carol Carlson, not necessarily truly local, but she's on Zach team with us, and Carol's a really cool person, and that was the folks in the 10K. In the half marathon, there was quite a few local people as well. Here's a few that I listed that I kind of saw real quick. Tony Hoff, Jonas Wrighty, Louis St. George, Tiffany Carey, Bill Kelly, Kirsten Anderson, Brittany Markren, Sarah Cogger. So a really good turnout there for the half. And I apologize for people who I have missed. But that was a good turnout to see for sure. And then also in the full marathon, we had some guys that I thought did really well. Sam Drellinger finished eighth overall. Barry Brokaw was 11th overall. Those are two Zach teammates of mine, the Zenith Athletic Club, with a nice showing over there at Whistle Stop. And then a guy in my training group, Tom Stoley, was shooting for a Boston qualifying time, and he hit his Boston qualifying time just kind of right on the nose with a 3:25 solid time. So congratulations to Tom for that. It was a fun day over there to kind of cheer everybody on and watch everybody go.
Nice.
Mike, have you ever ran over there? Have you done that race?
I did the half 1 year, okay, in, I believe, 2014.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, what did you think?
I thought it was a good race. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the surface, honestly.
Yep.
Like, I remember getting kind of frustrated with the crushed kind of limestone. Like, it's not really trail, it's not really road.
Yeah.
Kind of in between, and I was trying to pick my line, but... You know, nice, flat, fast. There's always good competition there.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in the half marathon. Well, even the marathon, you know, both of those races looked to be very competitive this year. And
yeah, the half especially. Two guys under 1:14, I think, for the top two times. That's pretty fast over there.
The top four, three of the top four guys list Duluth, Minnesota from their hometown. And I don't recognize any of their names. Luke Lair, 1:13:21 from Duluth. So
yeah,
looks like they're kind of younger guys. So maybe, you know, just recent post-collegiate runners or something. Benjamin Hansen and Adam Escuri all under 1:16:03.
Yeah,
essentially. So
yeah, I agree. I didn't know those guys' names at all either, but nice races for sure. And I know the female winning time was really fast as well.
Yeah, I mean, even in the full, there was, you know, five guys under 3 hours, mm-hmm. and four ladies under 3:20. So
yeah,
I mean, if you're looking for kind of that competitive race with a lot of different, you know, distance options, I think Whistle Stop's kind of the spot for, you know, that October time frame.
Yep, it is. It's a cool race. it kind of competes a little bit with Twin Cities, especially if you want to do a full. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of almost decide locally, do I want to run Whistle Stop or Twin Cities? And it's hard to know exactly which is the faster course because, like you say, Whistle Stop has that softer surface, and I do think you lose a little bit there. Though at the same time, it's mostly a subtle downhill grade almost all the way into town, so you gain a little bit there. Where Twin Cities has more hills, but it has the firmer surface, which you can go fast on. Plus, with Twin Cities, you get sometimes in the full marathon over at Whistle Stop, you can kind of end up running solo a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much with the half, but with the full, you can. Where Twin Cities, you're going to always have some folks to kind of run together with, which is kind of nice too. So it's hard to know exactly which is the truly faster course of the two, but both of them really great races, and I don't know. I always have a good time over at Whistle Stop. Plus, it's nice to be able to sleep in your own bed that night and then just drive over that morning.
For us Duluthians, it's definitely an easier logistical to do in
sure.
Ashland. So
yeah. Cool.
Next up, we got Surf the Murph and Savage 100. The Savage 100 miler is run every 5 years, and so this was one of the five-year times. The winner on the 100 mile is Brian Korgard. I know he's up in Duluth area a lot doing some of the ultra marathons that we host up here. So I've had a chance to chit chat with Brian. He actually won the second at last runner standing, excuse me, this year. So putting together quite the season. I know Brian also ran Superior 100. I think he got top five. So
I recognize there, that name for sure. Seen that name on leaderboards a lot.
Yeah. Good ultra runner, 18:42 for the top time. And then the top female is Jody Hollenbeck from Ramsey, Minnesota with a 31:03. She's friends with my mom.
So cool.
I know Jody through my mom, actually. Yeah. They're in the same kind of running group. Actually, with Brian, too. So,
sweet.
I think Brian and Jody run together a lot, and so they took the top spot for the 100 mile. In Savage, the 100K, we have one local runner in the 100K, Kyle Sather, with a 17:34:44. Nice job to Kyle, getting a big 100K effort in. And then in the 25K, Nathan Swenson wins it with a 1:52. I know we had some Duluthians down there. I'm just scrolling through the list here. Maybe not in the 25K, but they also had a 50K race where we had a few 50K runners. Brian Hedin from Duluth ran the 50K in a 6:37:31. In the 50 mile, we had Amber Hardwig from Duluth. Amber ran first overall female with a 9:08:31. Smoking time for...
Yeah, that's really good. Mile. Nice job, Amber.
I mean, that's like 30 minutes down from the winner, so... Really great time from Amber. Matt Lilliquist from Duluth, 10:15. Any other Duluthians down there? I don't know.
Yeah, those are the ones that I knew that were heading down. So, yeah.
Yeah, decent showing, you know, from Duluthians. But, of course, that competes with another trail race, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, the Wild Duluth races. So
yep.
I believe those were on the same day. So you can kind of pick one or the other.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. If you're a Duluthian, like, for me, I'm going with the local one.
But. Yeah, another one where you have to, like, Whistle Stop in Twin Cities, where you have to kind of decide which one you're going to do.
Yeah. We had a few local 5Ks to talk about. First is the Pumpkin Run over in Cloquet. 194 finishers this year. The top spot, Scott Bailing from Duluth with a 15:50. Nice time. Second place, David Hypenin. Dave's back. 16:48 for second place, and then Evan Walpole with a 17:01. Nice job, guys. The ladies race was won by Kelly Pechos. I might be pronouncing that wrong. Sorry, Kelly.
Yeah.
With a 20:36, excellent time. That's good for seventh overall. So Leah Hammond, second place with a 22-25. And third place lady on the second page here, Alicia Bradley. Nice work, Alicia, 24-04. She's having a nice fall of racing as well. Yeah, the other 5K is a inaugural race this year. And one of the bigger races in Duluth, period, with as a first-year race. 861 finishers for the North End Nightmare 5K, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
In Superior, Wisconsin. That might be the biggest race in Superior.
Probably is. Yeah. Yeah.
Of any distance, really.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
So Grandma's Marathon puts it on. It's a fundraiser for the Young Athletes Foundation.
Yep.
You know, I think it's a great addition to their portfolio. I was out there not running. I was in the creepy clown corner.
Yes.
And so it's a really cool concept that I haven't really heard of or thought about, where it's like half 5K course, half, you know, what do they call it? Like
haunted
a
house
haunted house
kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. It was fun. I definitely scared a few people, like by popping out, which you know, when you're trying to run, it's weird. But it was fun. It was a fun day, and you know, semi-competitive as well. Scott Bailing took the win with a 16:01. Evan Walpole right behind, 17:20. The women's champion, seventh place overall, Rochelle Worth. She just is a good runner. 57 years old.
Yeah.
2027.
57 years old and ran.
Yeah,
mid 20s. That's pretty solid.
That is super solid.
Yeah, and it's a fast course too. A really very fast course, kind of a two loop, but pancake flat.
Yep.
And like Mike said, you kind of just kind of cruise through different sections of scary places, I guess, with Creepy Clown Town and a few other things that kind of went on as you kind of rode along through the route.
A lot of turns, though, in the course.
Yep.
I know that. You know, that might slow things down a little bit. I mean, Scott's time, for instance, to win, I think he did quite a bit faster at
He was 15:50 at Pumpkin Run, so about 11 seconds. But I think he was also in costume at North End. Is that right?
Yeah, he was running as a banana.
So I don't know. Maybe a banana shortens your stride length. I'm not sure.
That might slow you down by 11 seconds. Yeah. So... moving on to, should we talk about Wild Duluth a little bit?
Yeah, Wild Duluth, big event here mid to late October in our area, especially now with kind of the new stuff that they threw out there, which we'll talk about as well.
Yeah, so I thought it was a great format and great concept, where in years past, the Wild Duluth races have had a 100K, a 50K, and the half marathon, and now they split the half marathon up to Sunday, and they added the terribly tough 10K to Sunday, and then the 100K and the 50K are on Saturday. And so a couple things why the race directors, Kim and Andy Holak, did that. I think one is to increase the overall limit of people that can run.
Yep.
So I think that's pretty cool to just allow more people to do the half and the 10K. But also, and this might be like after the fact as a kind of a cool thing, but they had the challenge, which I know we've talked about on the podcast about, you know, if you do the 100K and the 10K and then, or the 50K and the half.
Yeah.
And for completing the challenge, we got a hatchet.
Yeah.
And just kind of bragging rights. It was kind of a neat deal. And just like an interesting test. Like if you're doing a really long race or even like a marathon, like why would you go out and run the next day? Like you would never just do that.
Yeah.
So this kind of makes you do it. And yeah, it was weird, but really fun. So, Wild Duluth 100K, we'll get to results here. Won by me. I don't know how to present this, but, 11:56:01, which fun fact is just 20 seconds off of the slowest winning time.
Nice.
So I have the second slowest winning time, but I'll take it, I guess. The ladies champion, Stacy Marion, with a 13:14. And, some other Duluthians in the mix. Tyler Koblisark, I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's a new runner, more of a skier. I got to talk to him after the race. You know, super strong runner. So I think he has potential if he wants to keep doing trail and ultra stuff for sure.
That's cool.
Ryan Braun, he is a former champion, a former second place, and now he has a third place finish.
Yeah.
At the Wild Duluth 100, and I got to talk to him on course. He was a little bit under the weather. He said he was drained and he caught a cold that week. And so I would definitely would have expected Ryan to be about an hour faster, but I think the cold took its toll. And then Brandon Johnson out of Barnum, what a year for Brandon. He is just a machine. With the win at Last Runner Standing, he did Superior, he did Badger State 100, which was, you know, I think a sub-18-hour effort, you know, really flat and fast. And then to follow up with a 12:38 for fourth place, not too bad at all. So Jamie Blumentritt was second ladies, and then Gretchen Metza was third place for ladies. So, you know, some familiar names in the, you know,
the local ultra world, for local.
So the 50K results, I have to get them up here. So I'll talk about Harden Heck. Wynn Davis wins Harden Heck with 1:50.57 for the half marathon. Nice job, Wynn. He's always at the top of kind of that, you know, mid-distance trail stuff. Like the marathon, I think, is really a specialty. The first place ladies was Jessica Norman with a 2:32.42. And then let me get up the 50K results here. I was excited to see the 50K, you know, as a 100K runner, to see how the field was shaping up. And then also to see how it all panned out, because it looked like it was going to be really competitive in the 50K. And sure enough, there's a lot of people really clumped up. When I saw the runners at like Ely's Peak, maybe mile 12 or something, everyone was so clumped up. Like the top 10 people were 5 minutes apart. You know, so like, how's this going to pan out?
You know? No doubt.
First place was Benjamin Drexler. I believe he's a runner from the Minneapolis area, right under 5 hours, 4:58.10. I believe he got second place at Superior 100 this year. So
yeah, that name is familiar for sure.
Yeah, Benjamin Drexler, definitely a good trail runner. Second place, Patrick Griffith with a 5:01. And then third place overall, first ladies, Kaylin Williams with a 5:21.29. So excellent running by Kaylin. Second place, female, Anna Lottie, 5:35.47. There's some other local notable mentions here. Chase Edgerton. Chase and I had some really fun races at NMPC, kind of duking it out back and forth. And he did the, now I'm forgetting the name of the challenge.
The 50K and the half.
The 50K and the half challenge. Yeah. And so he did both. Kyle Severson, 5:43.
Nice.
Sam Jacobson, 5:43. So Ryan Soule, 5:47, and Ryan just won Icebox 480, by the way.
Oh, nice. So,
Kyle Schmidt in there, 5:58. So definitely some a lot of local runners in that one. And then if I can find the 10K results, I will announce those as well. That was a fun race. So I didn't know how that would go at all, because I've never done anything like that.
Right.
And somehow the legs came around, and Mike Ward, first place, 52:59, which 8:32 pace, roughly. Greg Hapla, second, 56:36. Dave Schuneman, third place, 56:41. Sarah Cogger won the ladies race with a 106:17. Kathy Dooley, 107:19. And Brittany Markren with 107:50. Round out the ladies podium. So, tough course for the terribly tough 10K, for sure. So I think that kind of wraps up the Wild Duluth. Just beautiful weather for that weekend, you know, such a fun local race. And I mean, if you're looking for a just fall you know, trail race, that's the one to really look at if you're a Duluth trail runner, for sure.
It looked like it was really good. We were out of town, but it looked like it was really good weather for that race, which is nice when that's a really cool weekend when the weather is good for that race.
Definitely. Should we get on to some NMTC?
Yeah, let's do some NMTC stuff.
Yeah, the NMTC.
Kind of wrap up that series for the year.
The NMTC series just wrapped up yesterday as we're recording, and so we have just two results to announce here. Rolling Stone at Spirit Mountain was October 27th, Sunday. Pretty much straight downhill, then straight back up. The trails in Duluth have been closed, and so it was on pretty much just like the gravel access road. And you know, nothing really technical at all. So definitely some faster times. About a 5K course. Ben Cogger wins it with an 18:34. Nate Gieske second, 18:54. On the ladies' side, Christy Nixon takes it. And then the finale race at Hawk Ridge, and this was kind of opposite from the Rolling Stone race where it was all on kind of gravel pavement, but you run uphill, turn around, then come back downhill.
Yeah.
And so a little bit flip-flop there. Ryan Evans wins it with 20 minutes flat for about a 6K course. Ben Cogger second place. On the ladies' side, the winner was Alicia Huddleston with a 25 minutes flat. And then Kaylin Williams with a 25:13. And then so, as it turns out, the standings, I'll do the top three. Ethan Anderson was the first place on the guys' point standings. Mike Ward, me, second place. And I couldn't edge Ethan out. So
you were trying, though.
I was trying.
Yeah.
And Nate Gieske, third place on the guys' side. On the ladies' side, continuing her domination, Kaylin Williams, first place with almost a perfect score of 11:95. A lot of 150s on there. Elizabeth Sellers, second place. Kelly Pichus, third place. So, yeah, and actually the top four ladies beat out Ethan with his time. And so in the final standings, they blend the men and the female. And then,
Yeah,
but I'm happy. I got a, you know, I think I was like sixth person to get my name called. So I got to the you know, prize table, and I nabbed a Rocksteady running certificate.
Oh, nice.
For a free entry
for
to
a race.
Pretty much any of the 2020 races.
Wow, that's pretty sweet.
But none of the 100 milers are included, so.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right.
But I'm looking at Zumbro 50 mile.
Nice.
So it was all worth it.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And then I guess let's get into an interview. I did an interview on site at the Hawk Ridge right before the potluck. I got a hold of Kaylin Williams, who's just had a stellar fall of racing at NMTC, and of course a third place overall, which is really super impressive at Wild Duluth. So let's hear from Kaylin. All right, so we're here with the Duluth Rundown. We're at the NMTC, the finale at Hawk Ridge. I'm here with Kaylin Williams, winner of the Wild Duluth 50K. Hey, Kaylin.
Hi, how's it going, Mike?
Going good. Hey, how was the 50K? How did it play out? Give me a play-by-play.
It was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed doing all the trail races. I had no idea what to expect of myself during the whole race. The start was a little rough. I made a poor shoe choice at the beginning, new shoes that I hadn't really run in very much. So I had a blister the first 3 miles, but it popped by the first aid station, so then I was okay. And it's just really fun to be able to see. This community here is so nice, being able to run into everybody and talk to people along the way, have some conversations, especially like with that distance. It's nice to be able to talk to people along the way and make sure I'm being able to chit-chat with everybody.
Yeah.
So
I saw you maybe about 10 miles in. Well, I saw the whole group pass. You know, and you were maybe about 10th place, I think second female, and you really moved through the field. Can you tell me about that, how kind of the race played out, or did you have a strategy? Or?
Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah, you know, I really have not had a strategy. I try to just, the past couple years, my two goals have been to have fun and stay injury-free. I feel like I used to get really stressed out before races, and my goal now is to just have fun and stay injury-free, like I said. And so if I'm feeling okay, I'll just keep running as fast and however I feel like running. And if I don't feel good, then I'll slow down. And I just happened to feel pretty good that day. So I'm really happy that worked out.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. So were you picking people off the whole time, or were you kind of by yourself? Or?
Yeah, for a while I was running with a few people, kind of consistently and going back and forth a little bit. And then towards, I'd say about halfway, like at the top of Spirit or so, is when I noticed that it started to thin out a little bit, and just I guess I was still passing a few people every once in a while, which is kind of exciting. It's always feel a little bad, but it is also really fun to pass people off. But that it definitely started to dwindle, like the crowds started to thin out a little bit there.
Nice. And how about today at the Hawk Ridge finale? Did you win today?
No, I actually came in second, but it was such a fun race. This is a different course, so I think it was super fun, just the straight uphill and the straight downhill. I love running downhill. The uphill was also really nice. It was a pretty tough uphill, but it was still really fun. It's just like the Wild Duluth race, just a really good group of people. The camaraderie here is amazing. Totally.
So what's next for you? Do you have any races coming up in the winter or next spring, or what are you eyeing up for 2020?
I don't have any running races yet figured out. I'm sure I'll figure a couple out here and there. I am starting to get ready. I love to ski in the winter a lot, especially. I like to run too, but I mostly love to cross country ski, so I have a few races I'll be doing in the winter for that too, and back off a little from the running.
Nice, cool. Well, great positivity. Love the positivity.
Yeah, you too.
See you around.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
All right, and next we got some upcoming races. It's kind of towards the end of the season, so there's not a lot on the calendar, at least locally. Two of them that we'll just mention real quick. Number one is on November 10th, the Rivet Run 5K over in Patterson State Park, a little trail race over there. Really cool trail. I've never ran that race, but I've ran that loop, and that's a really pretty trail. You go up by the waterfall and come back down around. It's a nice little loop. So that's a pretty cool little race. And then also, we'll talk about this with our next podcast, but we'll mention it now as well, is the Gobble Gallop. I think most of our listeners know about the Gobble Gallop. It's been around for pushing 15 years now, I bet. And a really fast, fun 5K on Thanksgiving morning, right before everybody stuffs their faces and watches football and sleeps on the couch, that kind of a thing.
That's how you
justify it all. But it's a fun race, really family-oriented, and everybody really gets into that race. So, and we'll talk more about that on our next podcast, because we have one more scheduled to record right before Thanksgiving. So we'll talk a little bit more about Gobble Gallop as well. So those are two that are coming up. I'm sure that there's a few other small ones that we're missing, but those are the two that I can think of that I could see too on Northland Runner.
Isn't it wild? So, just 4 weeks ago, we had like a whole sheet of upcoming races, and then just kind of like, just like that,
right?
You know, a snap of the fingers, like the season,
it's all over. And I want to talk a little bit about that later on when we get to the kind of the coach's corner segment of the podcast.
Yeah,
cool.
We'll hop into trails report now. I think the trail running season is a little bit on the out.
Yes. And I think this is shoulder season.
Shoulder season.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think it matches up well with the lack of upcoming races. You know, I think now is a good time to just kind of, you know, hang them up for a little bit, perhaps. Or either way, the trails are officially closed in the city of Duluth, all natural surface trails. The city, I think, just this year kind of did the more of a fall-based blanket trail closure, whereas I know at least the last several years they've done a spring blanket trail closure, and you know, they are in pretty rough shape, muddy. However, you know, it's really getting cold. This week's forecast is supposed to be cold. I think a lot of trails, especially if they're like semi-dry, you know, for instance, I don't have a good example, but you know, just trails that don't usually get that muddy, I think are going to be pretty well frozen and firm and hard. But still, you know, check City of Duluth website, the Parks and Rec page, check COGS, Superior Hike and Trail Association. You know, whatever trail you're going on, there's a website with, you know, trail conditions. It's just a good idea to check that before you go out. So another good thing to note too is hunting season starts actually today as we record. So if you're looking to go like up north on the SHT, technically they list it as closed for hunting season, where a lot of the SHT is on private land. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's on public hunting land where you can hunt with a rifle.
Yep.
And so it's funny how, you know, they do a trail closure for mud. Something like, well, mud doesn't really deter people. Getting shot, I think, deters people a lot more. So, and even now, this time of year, like if you are going out in the woods, you know, just wear blaze orange, even if
Yep,
for sure. Just to be safe.
Yeah, especially if you're gonna go in on somewhere, some SHT, like I said, outside of town. I think that's for me when it gets a little more sketchy, and I just don't go out that way, especially early in rifle season. Things like grouse have been going on, bow has been going on for a little while now. Here in the last handful of weeks, I'm not as concerned about that in terms of accidental fire kind of a deal. But a rifle bullet goes quite a long ways, and so that just seems to me, I'm always a little bit scared when I'm out there in those situations and just don't want to be out there. So
I'll tell you what trail I'm going to be on.
Lake Walk.
The Lake Walk.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's newly repaved down by Fickers. It's really beautiful.
Oh, nice. I haven't seen that.
It's open. There's a new boardwalk. Huh. It looks really, really nice.
Oh,
so
cool. That's good to know.
That's a good trail to go on for sure.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. The Munger,
just roads.
Yep. And just your local roads. Yeah.
Kind of road running season.
Yeah. Even if you're doing some gravel roads. And again, if you're farther outside of town, to me personally, that gets a little sketchy too, because of the hunting season. So I love to run the gravel roads out there, like in Lakewood Township and things. But right now I won't be out there. I'll just be local, staying in town for sure.
Check out the Lake Walk.
Yeah. I'll have to do that.
I want to hop into Coach's Corner there, Tony.
Let's do some shout outs first.
Okay.
I want to do a couple of shout outs and then we'll do, some Coach's Corner. I have two.
Me too.
Okay, cool. So one actually is my buddy Dave Hypo, just for kind of, and I think maybe we even talked about this last time too, but he continues to race really well. And I know he's super thrilled with that. And it's pretty cool to see because he had that bad injury. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to Hypo, even though it might be two podcasts in a row that I've done that. And my second shout out is to you, Mike, for winning the 100K and the 10K. That was a pretty cool thing to see. So a big shout out to our very own co-host, Mike Ward.
Thanks. All the hard work paid off.
That's right.
My two shout outs are one, Sean Woodland. He's not a local Duluthian anymore, but he used to be, and I've run with him a few times, and he's been really fun to track on social media. I guess I'm referencing more like Garmin Connect and Strava, but he's been putting in some big miles. It's like, what is Sean training for? And he ran a 2:46 at the New York City Marathon. So, same to Sean, you know, all the hard work pays off, and looks like he put together a pretty dang good race.
Yeah, so happy! Congratulations, Sean. Hopefully, you'll hear this podcast, but we're super happy for you.
Yeah, and then my next shout out was just this Saturday, Eric Nordgren, which we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about results from the Icebox 480, but. Kind of a cool, unique event where 480, as in 480 minutes, it's an 8-hour loop trail course and in River Falls, Wisconsin. And Eric ran, I think he did top five. I'm looking at results right now. But either way, I think he had a good kind of season cap on the season.
And that's his old stomping grounds, too. He went to school there, so he was running on some trails that he had ran down years ago. So kind of a cool experience for him, I'm sure. And,
And then he turned around, and, you know, after that, I think he did over 50 miles. And then yesterday ran the NMTC race.
Yeah.
I think he threw down like a 6-minute mile to cap it off. I'm sure he passed a lot of people. Nice. So he must not be too worse for the wear, I guess. Shout outs covered.
I think so. That's what I had. Yeah.
Should we hop in Coach's Corner now or?
Yeah, might as well.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do some Coach's Corner. I wanted to just talk about the kind of the season a little bit as we're shifting gears on the weather a little bit, and it's getting colder, and now you're starting to wear, you know, your tights and your thin gloves and your jacket and a little bit more that kind of stuff. And, literally as we're recording right now, it's snowing outside and there's snow sticking to the ground a little bit. So here we are, kind of end of the race season, cooler weather. So the weather's changing, and now I kind of feel like mentally, as a runner, your gears shift as well, and you're kind of out of race mode for a little bit, and you just kind of, you're into that winter running mode. And, you know, the decision often becomes, you know, what do I want next year to be, in this case 2020? What do I want it to be like? So I like to think of not waiting until January 1st with the idea of these New Year's resolutions, but starting right now, and I kind of refer to them as next year's resolutions. I'm going to make my decisions for 2020 starting right now, and what am I going to do? And a lot of times the question that you have to ask yourself is for the upcoming season is, do I want to go faster or do I want to go farther? Meaning, like, Do I increase distances? Am I trying to maybe do a distance that I've never ran before? Or am I trying to increase my mileage to do something else? Or do I want to like work on speed work and I want to do some shorter races and try to PR in a half marathon or something like that? Like, what's my focus going to be for 2020 in this case? I feel like now is the time to really be thinking about that. And then you can kind of plan out the next, let's say, three months of training, November, December, January, where things can be, I guess, more of a long-term focus in your training. You can kind of dial back the laser-like intensity where you're focused in on this specific race and you're just kind of running with the idea of the entire season coming up ahead. And so the big thing to me with that in mind when you're thinking of that long-term approach is keeping that consistency throughout these winter months. Don't necessarily have to put in big miles, but as long as you're really consistent, I think is a key to that also. Anyway, that's kind of my approach to the upcoming winter season is having an idea of what you want to do for the following season, in this case 2020, and then being consistent with that approach too. So start thinking about, you know, the next 14 months of your running.
That's an interesting thought about consistency. And, you know, I always kind of wonder about, you know, how many weeks can I like take off without sacrificing the fitness that I have,
yeah.
You know, versus, you know, on the other hand, it's like, well, I should take time off to, you know, just address the laser-like focus that I've been putting onto these fall races.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And kind of this in-between time, where do you strike the balance?
It can be tricky, but I think mentally it's good to kind of shut that down. That it's hard to stay that mental focused for a really, really long time, and now is a really nice opportunity to at least put that aside a little bit, and you don't have to worry about what's my next race in 3 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever. That part's all done. I can still run and have some intensity and focus in my given daily run, but then that's kind of, it ends right there with that one day, and then now I just move on to the next day.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of a nice point of the year. I think when Jess Koski was our guest, he had talked about, with the winters here in Duluth and with the off season, it is kind of a nice break and it's almost a little bit of a reward to be able to have that opportunity to just like, now we just shut it down. We just run for the beauty of running. If we want to have a little bit of an intent to it, that's fine, but it doesn't necessarily need to be that super laser focus intent. It needs to be more of a long-term intent for, you know, June grandmas of 2020 and October of 2020 when the races are really heating up, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So
October, that's a long way out.
I know.
October 2020.
But it pays off, you know, like they say, like skiers are made in the summer. You know, the work that you do in the summer for cross-country skiing pays off in the winter. And that's the same thing with running, too. Like, there's another saying that sometimes you're training for next year. You know, all the miles that you do now in November, December, January are going to pay off big time next June, July, August, September, October. So that's where that consistency comes into play and sets you up nicely for the early season training and intensity.
Well, some thoughts as you don't run as much.
Yeah, don't run as much but potentially run more often or something like that. You have to decide what works for you and that kind of a thing. And, you know, that's where also having a coach and things can come in handy. And coaching isn't always about how do I write a training plan for 3 months for this specific race. It's sometimes a far longer term kind of approach. And what do we do non-racing season? What do we do in racing season? That kind of a thing. So, yep.
Yeah. Moving on. Do you have any gear reviews?
Gear reviews? No, I don't actually. I didn't even think about gear reviews. Did you?
I did.
Yeah. What do you have?
I have two new pieces of gear. One I'm really excited about, and I've probably talked about this before, but I think it's my favorite shoe of all time, the Brooks Cascadia.
Yeah.
And that's what I ran the Wild Duluth 100K in. And I kind of had some anxiety about it. And I was like stress shopping. And so now I have like five pairs of trail shoes.
Nice.
Like, these will work. No, they won't. I need my Brooks. And so I don't know, especially if anyone's out there, you know, looking for something that's 100K or longer, or just kind of a good plod or a long shoe. Or I really like it for winter running because it feels kind of like a road shoe. I think you have that kind of protection, I guess, or cushioning like a road shoe, but also some grip, and it just feels good when the conditions are kind of sloppy, you know, just like some snow and ice on the sidewalks and stuff. And try the Brooks Cascadia. They work for me. What can I say?
You know, for me, it's funny, like personally, when I was running trails more often a few years ago, I really liked more of the minimalist stuff. I liked to really feel the trail, and I felt like I got almost better stability with less shoe because I was closer to the ground. Now that I've actually gotten older, and number one, I don't run as much trail as I used to, but as I've gotten older, I actually like the cushier feel, like the Cascadia. I have the Nike Wild Horse, which is kind of a Nike version of the Cascadia in a way, in terms of the cushioning underneath the foot. I like that a little bit better now. I feel like maybe I'm not running as aggressively in those technical, you know, superior hiking trail situations. So having a little more cush has actually paid off for me. Mm-hmm. But that, like you said, the Cascadia is a nice kind of a balance. It has a road shoe feel, but it can still has some agility to it, which comes in handy in that technical situation. You kind of need to pop your feet in and out of roots and rocks pretty quickly at times. Mm-hmm. And the Cascadia can still handle that while at the same time giving you the cushion. If you needed to run 5 miles on the lake walk to get to a trail or something along those lines, a Cascadia would be a great choice, where a minimalist trail shoe in that situation might not be the best choice.
Might hurt a little bit.
It might hurt your foot a little bit, yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned the Wild Horse, because that's the shoe that I put the bulk of my training in for Wild Duluth. And so, you know, I did several 20-plus mile runs on course, you know, on the SHT with the Wild Horse.
Yeah.
And that worked really, really well for me. However, it was just getting a little, you know, the shoe's kind of broken down and getting old, and it was like, I don't know if I want to race in this. And so then I was looking at Ultras, because I got an Ultra road shoe and really liked it. And so I got the Ultra Superior, and I know I talked about this last episode, but that's pretty minimalist.
That
like,
one is. Yeah.
100K on that might be a big mistake.
Yeah.
And my fallback
on the SHT, it would have been a mistake, yeah.
With the rocks. And,
yeah.
And so my old fallback's the Brooks Cascadia, and it worked out great.
Yep.
And I got another piece of Brooks gear, actually, and not like I really care about the brand for apparel, but I got a pair of half tights, which I've never run in before.
Yeah.
And so I was curious if I'd like them compared to shorts, and I do like them.
Yeah.
I like the feel, and, you know, although it might not really matter, I kind of like the look, or just like the feel, the look, the whatever of them, and... Yep. It's just a little bit something different, and I think it might serve me well for kind of this, like you said, the shoulder season, where kind of in between, do I wear shorts, do I wear tights, and my legs run hot for sure, like I can wear shorts down to 30 or even lower, so I think that kind of 25 to 30 degree range, I think these half tights might be the ticket, so.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. I had an old pair of Mizuno half tights, but I just bought a pair of Adidas half tights, not just like 2-3 weeks ago, actually. They work really well. I've always been more of a shorts guy, but those half tights are pretty nice in certain situations, and they're super comfy. I really like them. Yeah,
and I'm gonna do a preview for a gear review for next time, and this is referencing our interview with Lisa Byrne. Next episode, I'm gonna review the men's running bra.
Oh, yeah, right. So yeah, exactly.
I'm going to have Lisa knit me a Moreno men's running bra.
I thought you were going to make him sew your own. But
No. Lisa can do it. Totally kidding. Totally kidding. Well, maybe not. But
maybe not. But, yeah, there might be a market opportunity there.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll hop into what I'm into. I'll make mine quick, because I know yours is a little bit longer, Tony.
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially. Of course, I'm always into fastest known times on the Superior Hiking Trail. And... this year, just like I suspected, has been just continuous.
Yeah, an explosion of attempts.
Yeah, a barrage, an explosion of attempts on the SHT. And we had our first female fastest known time last week. So very cool. Alex Elizabeth, pretty storied ultra runner from the city. Storied might not be the right word, but experienced, I should say. I mean, she's
prolific.
Yeah. Prolific. She's got finishes at Superior 100, the 135 race. What am I thinking of?
Arrowhead
135, of course, and some winter stuff. And this was her second attempt on the Superior Hiking Trail this year. I think she made it over 250 or 200 miles earlier in the spring. And to come back during like a extreme October storm on her first day, and some of the pictures she was posting about, like, you know, knee deep water and iced over boardwalks, and she was crawling on the boardwalk. I mean, it was like epic. And yeah, so her time was just really stellar. 6 days, 12 hours, you know, which is really close to the overall supported record. And so I think that's going to be a really tough mark to beat.
Yeah.
So nice job, Alex. Nice job on the perseverance to go back out there. Like, I can't imagine that, like, going back out. I guess if you get that in your mind, like, you got to do it. You got to do it. So, yeah, so that's what I'm into. What I'm into there?
So what I'm into is kind of an interesting debate that's been happening relatively quickly now in the running world, and that's the shoes. You know, the 4%, the Vaporfly 4%, the Alphafly, the new version of that Kipchoge wore in his sub-2-hour marathon. And to me, it's a really fascinating debate of, are these shoes, should they be legal or should they not be legal? And how much do they help? And, you know, it's my opinion that these shoes absolutely make you run faster or help you run faster, especially in kind of that half marathon, marathon setting. I think it's just been shown time and time again with individuals who were at a certain pace, maybe knock, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes sometimes off of their more normal times. You know, the idea of a shoe making you faster, that's been a marketing ploy for years and years and years, even before, like, I remember when I was a little kid, my parents talking about PF Flyers. And anybody who's listening right now knows about PF Flyers, that shoes that make you faster, that make a kid faster. I think the movie The Sandlot even references that at one point, if you have seen The Sandlot. So this is an idea that's not anything new, of a shoe that makes you faster, but it's always been just kind of basically BS. A shoe doesn't make you faster. Now, I think truly a shoe makes you faster. And the debate, there's a couple of ways to look at this debate. One is in the professional running world, and one is more in the rank and file, all of us kind of world. The professional world, there's a fairness question, where if someone, say, is a Nike athlete, they get access to this shoe, where if someone is an Adidas athlete, they don't have access to this shoe if their contract requires them to wear Adidas and or whatever other brand it is. That might not necessarily be fair for those Adidas athletes or Brooks athletes or ASICS athletes or whomever, if this Nike shoe truly does make you faster, because it's just not an apples to apples comparison. I tend to agree with that. I think that it's not necessarily a fair thing. I think the IAAF needs to look at this and make a decision. I think you can also throw some blame on the other brands for not getting a shoe out there, because this Nike 4% has been out for, what is this, 3 years now? That this has been kind of happening, and the Alphafly is just extended even more so. I think it's a really interesting debate, and something needs to happen pretty quick, or it's just going to start to really get out of hand. My personal opinion is that they're not going to ban the shoe. I don't see that happening. I think they're going to chalk it up to progress and just technological advancements, just like you happen to see in other sports at times. We'll see what happens eventually, but I don't think they're going to ban it. I think the other shoe companies are going to have to get on the ball and get something out there that's going to be able to perform similarly to the Vaporfly, the Next Percent, the Alphafly, whatever Nike's next iteration is going to be. Then we think about the rank and file world, and, you know, the guy myself, who I'm like, I don't know, I haven't ran a marathon for a long time, but I'm probably about a 320, 325 marathoner. Now, if I put that shoe on and my goal is I want to run 310 and I run 309.59 in that shoe, I'm actually not going to feel super happy with that, because I'm going to know that the shoe did that for me, not me.
Yeah.
And for me, that doesn't necessarily sit well. I think that starts to get into the I'm going to buy my speed aspect, because I don't know, to me there's more to it than the what the clock says. Now, I understand it's legal, there's nothing wrong with it, I guess, in that regard, in terms of the legality. But to me, it's more of a moral issue. We've seen that by your speed approach in other sports with like road cycling and triathlon. And I think that's one thing why both those two sports have kind of faded off in importance, because it got to be way too much about time based. And I think that's turned people off. There are other aspects with those sports too that have come into play. But I think part of it is that it's just when you get everything so time based, the seriousness and competitiveness gets to be a little too much.
You feel like you need to buy that $6,000 wheel set even be competitive.
And then is it really all about you? I mean, are you then somewhat allowed to sort of slack on your training because, well, I bought this shoe, or I bought that wheel set. I don't need to work as hard anymore because the shoe will do this for me or whatever. I don't know. I just don't like the path that potentially can go down. So I personally would rather not run in those shoes and do the best I can do with what I have. I have a pair of the Nike Zoom Flies, which is kind of the poor man's version of the 4%. It has the carbon plate, but it doesn't have the same PBAX midsole foam. And if anybody's done any of the research on these 4% and the Next Percents and the Alpha Flies, it's actually the foam that gives most of the performance factors and not necessarily the carbon plate. More of it comes from the foam itself. And I can tell you from my experience, just anecdotally running in the Zoom Fly, which again, like I said, is the kind of the poor man's version of the 4%. The Zoom Fly, I definitely perform faster in that, just doing workouts in that shoe versus a different racing flat kind of shoe. My times are just faster in that shoe. Yeah. And ultimately I don't really like that. I'd rather it be me. I'd really rather it be me. And anyway, I think the debate is really interesting, and I don't know quite where it's going to go, but like I said, I predict that they're not going to ban that shoe. I think it's going to be a point where we see something else happen out there in the marketplace.
Sounds like you need a pair of PF Flyers.
PF Flyers would be great,
to slow you down a little bit.
Yeah, to slow me down a little
if
bit.
If you want a challenge on that 10K time, right. Put on the PF Flyers.
Well, yeah, there's so many different ways to look at it, and you can't, well, why not just race in your... all your races in your training shoes, you know, your 11 and a half ounce, you know, Brooks Transcend that I like to just pound out the miles in. Yeah. Okay, fine. If you're not for development, why not just do that? Okay. I guess that's a point, but,
I mean, the PF Flyers, maybe that's more marketing than actual performance. Whereas the Nike, you know, 4%, that's probably a technological improvement.
Yep.
But I mean, if you look at like Roger Bannister, he's probably running in, you know, leather shoes. Mm-hmm. Like obviously there have been major improvements from leather shoes to EVA foam.
Yeah. I mean, with the spikes, I don't think the spikes themselves are that much better. I think the big thing with a Bannister versus a modern day track athlete is the track itself. Cinder track versus the rubberized, the tartan tracks and the rubberized tracks. I think we definitely saw performance boosts with that advent of the new track surface. But the shoe wise, the differences have always been extremely minimal, historically, between say a modern day racing flat, like a Nike Streak, say the Streak 6 or 7, whatever the newest one, I think it's the 7, versus, an older racing flat from, you know, in the 1980s or something. The difference in performance from those two shoes really so minimal that it's pretty much negligent. But now this Next Percent is a game changer for sure, and it may or may not be fair. And while yes, the other sports have had technological advancements that have come into play, other sports have also banned some of those technological advancements as well, such as the swimsuits.
Remember
Laser suits. That was one brand that had that suit.
Yeah, Speedo, right?
Laser.
Laser was the brand.
And it really wasn't fair to the other athletes. And there was clearly a huge advantage. So they banned it. So there is some precedent. And this has happened before in other sports as well. Golf has certain club head size regulations. Tony Rivas on his website talked about NASCAR had some issues with tires and some advancement in tire rubber.
Do you think it's based on like a percentage of, you know, I don't know what to say, like help, you know, or like
Yeah,
like
I know.
If it's 4%, you know, to use the brand name, if right. it gets you a 4%, isn't that why it's named? It's a 4% improvement or something like that?
Overall, for some people don't get any improvements. Some people have been shown to get, you know, as much as 6 or 7 or 8%. And so 4% is just kind of the average.
That's what why Nike named it though, right?
Exactly.
As a 4% improvement.
Yep.
I mean, if it gets to a 5% improvement just by the shoes, banned, right? Or I mean, is there a hard line like the laser suits? Do you think it was a percentage of speed on average after some testing?
I don't know. I think that seems to make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like there has to be a line, and where is that line drawn? I have no idea where it is, but yeah, percentage of base performance, you know, improvement off of that seems like that's where you would draw the line. But honestly, I think there's some politics probably involved, and that's one reason personally.
The deep pockets of Nike.
Exactly. Why I think they won't ban the shoe, because I think Nike is too powerful in the running world, especially in the US, but even globally as well. That's my prediction. And I guess maybe that sounds overly cynical, but I just kind of feel like that's what's going to happen.
But like technological improvements are, I mean, first of all, inevitable, I think.
Yep.
And second of all, like good, right? I mean, why
sometimes.
Not?
Sometimes. Well, I can give you an example, two examples why they're not good in technological advancements. One, baseball. Professional baseball still uses wooden bats.
Mm-hmm.
They've had aluminum bats out for years, you know, at least in the 70s for sure.
Yeah.
Why don't they use aluminum bats in professional baseball? Safety. They're too dangerous. The ball comes off way too fast.
Mm.
So they do it for safety purposes.
Right, right.
Same thing with NASCAR and those tires. Those tires ran a lot faster, but they wore down really quick, and there were safety issues. So they're putting safety ahead of performance in those two situations. Those are just two off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's...
That's smart.
That's smart. Now, that's safety smart. Is not necessarily going to be the issue in a running shoe. Like, I'm running so fast, I fall down and break my teeth.
Or you get injured.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, there is some talk about that. That's another thing in that debate is, since these shoes are so new, are that we're going to see some long-term effects in runners' injury rates overall, especially for people who train full-time in those 4%. I think that's interesting. To me, that, I don't know. We'll see if that happens or not.
It's a little bit of a stretch.
it probably is, but you never know.
These
are drastically different shoes, and for some people, depending on their running form, it might really tweak their form enough to where it could have some I don't know, detrimental effects, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see about that. That remains to be seen. But there certainly are instances where technological advancements are not a good thing in sport. So, in fact, another one that came to mind right now is football with helmets.
Mm.
Used to have just a leather helmet and no face guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, concussion issues weren't maybe quite the issue. Now you've got these great protective helmets and they can bash each other's heads in.
Yeah.
You know, and now all of a sudden we're starting to see concussion issues. So
more so. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting, you know, especially in 50 years or 100 years, if you look back at Kipchoge going under 2 hours, you know, and just an incredible feat. I mean, I wonder if people will look at that and say, well, it was all the shoe. Remember this whole shoe thing? Or, you know, just kind of like most other running records that just continue to fall is like, you know, just people get better or the whole world of people gets whittled down to runners better than in the 1900s where, like, you know, I don't know. I'm sure, you know, people in Kenya, you know, the best running nation in the world, they probably weren't thinking of trying these running feats and they didn't have money to do it. And I mean, obviously Kipchoge had just a ridiculous support crew behind him.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So, you know, just to say like, okay, you find this one guy in Kenya who has, you know, the genetic ability to do this and then, you know, put the training behind it, all this behind it. I mean, they just didn't have that option in the 1900s. So, you look 100 years from now, do you say like, well, it's just because of the globalization and whatever, or is it more like it is the shoe?
Yeah.
Time will tell, I guess.
Huh? Yep. Yep. Exactly.
It is interesting. I haven't really considered it and I haven't researched it a ton personally, but I'm more of the standpoint, like it's good. I think that should be developed more. And I think that it's only a matter of time that like Adidas and Brooks and I mean, that's just going to be the norm.
Everyone apparently has their prototypes out there, and some of them have already been in racing situations. Brooks, Saucony, Asics, Adidas, apparently all have those kinds of. In fact, you know, Hoka has a shoe with a carbon plate. The idea of a carbon plate isn't anything necessarily new, nor is any kind of a plate necessarily. But again, with that Nike shoe, it's the foam that is the foam number one performance factor. It's the PBAX foam. From some of the research and things that I've heard, when it talks, they talk about energy return, which is a phrase that, again, shoes have used forever. It's always been kind of a marketing gimmick, but you can measure this stuff in the lab. And EVA foam, which is your traditional midsole foam, returns roughly 65% of energy. And TPU, which is kind of the new stuff that Adidas brought out to the market a few years ago.
That's rubber, right?
Thermoplastic unit is TPU. Okay. So, and their Boost foam, they call it Boost. That's their proprietary name. Saucony has it. They call it Everrun. Other brands have it as well now. That returns about 75%, so roughly 10% more than EVA. And PBAX, which also, that's not necessarily a new foam. Other people have had PBAX plates and things. In fact, Mizuno, their shoe, the Wave Precision, years ago had a PBAX wave plate. But now that it's used as a midsole foam, and of course the recipe of that PBAX has changed a touch, but PBAX returns in the high 80% of energy. So we're talking 20% more than EVA foam of energy return, PBAX versus EVA. That's significant. That's where most of the performance factor of that 4% shoe comes from, is from the midsole foam.
But then they say, you know, based on maybe it's a marketing ploy or just actual testing, that you get a 4% faster times.
4% is Nike's.
So obviously the energy return of the foam doesn't have a direct correlation to the getting faster, obviously.
Well,
you know, 20%, 4%.
Well,
it's not 20%, 20% faster, you know? Know what I mean?
Right, right, exactly. Everyone will still experience different performance benefits from it. But one thing, there's like a handful of things that PBAX does. And another thing is it reduces a lot of muscle fatigue, especially that's why that's such a good marathon shoe. It's because by the time, you know, mile 18, 19 to 26 kind of roll around, you're simply a little less fatigued in that PBAX foam because more energy has been kind of, rebounded out of that shoe. And so, yeah, you can kind of maintain a faster pace for a little bit longer.
Interesting topic for sure.
Yeah, it really has been fascinating to watch, and it's really kind of exploded ever since Kipchoge's 159.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, right away people are like, look, this is great and all, but the shoes allowed him to run under 2 hours. And at first, I personally was like, oh, man, come on.
Yeah.
Just celebrate the fact that somebody did it. You know, somebody tried to run. They publicly announced that they're going to try it. You know, this is the second time now that they're going to try to run under 2 hours. And the guy did it. He ran 248 per K to 252 per K over and over and over and over again. It was an incredible feat. And then, you know, some people, well, where's the shoe? And I was kind of like, dude, come on, chill. But in my opinion, it gave him the 20 seconds. The shoe itself gave him those 20 seconds. Again, not trying to take anything away. He's the greatest marathoner of all time, without a doubt. But to me, he probably wouldn't have done it with the Zoom Streak. Had he worn the Zoom Streak 7 or whatever, I don't think he would have ran.
But, like, you know, what about nutrition? What about, like, I mean, I think there's so many other roughly technological factors that are just not even mentioned.
True.
The shoe gets all the...
Yeah.
You know, like, can you really shave off 4% of your effort based on your diet? Like,
right. Yep. Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. We can jammer on forever about this, you know?
Yeah. To me, like I said, I think it's a really, really interesting debate, and it's going to be curious to see where it goes here in the next handful of months, both in the professional world and in the rank and file world. Because I do, like I mentioned earlier, I do think those are two separate issues in a way.
Well, we can revisit this, I think, especially if anything happens in the politics of it all, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. The professional world will set the tone for the rank and file world. If they ban it professionally, then obviously it'll be banned rank and file, but I don't expect that to happen. So
get them while you can, huh?
I guess get them while you can, but yeah, of course, the shoes are super expensive as well. And like I said, for me personally, I'd rather it be me. I'd rather it be me than trying to buy my speed. I just don't like that aspect.
Do you think it's a placebo effect at all, or just mental?
I don't think really it's a placebo effect. I know some people have claimed that too. Oh, those shoes don't make you faster. You just think you. No. There's too many independent studies and too many. Just the anecdotal evidence alone is just continuing to mount up and mount up. If you look at Cal International last year at the marathon trials, or the marathon for people trying to qualify for the trials, the amount of people who ran that trials qualifying time, that was unbelievable. And the vast majority of them were in those shoes. And those were guys who and gals who were not at those times before the shoe.
Yeah. What's the X factor there?
Huh? What's the X factor? I know anecdotal evidence is anecdotal evidence, but when it starts to become that much of it, it really starts to point in a direction. So.
Well, Brooks Adidas, release the shoe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, props to Nike for innovating and getting it out there on the market, and they're just ahead of everybody else in that regard.
Yeah.
The question is, are they too far ahead and we need to put a stop to it? Or is it the question, too bad for everybody else? You guys need to get your butt in gear. I don't know.
We'll see.
Yep. And maybe I'll change my personal mind too, like down the road, if now Brooks has a shoe and ASICS has a shoe and all these other people have a shoe and it just becomes this accepted thing. Maybe it just becomes a situation of, if you can't beat them, join them. I don't know. We'll see. But as I stand right now in 2019, I don't want that shoe.
Until the ASICS 5% comes out.
Right. Yeah. I get an extra 1%.
Well, I guess that kind of wraps up part one. And so on to part two, our interview with Lisa Byrne.
Yeah.